Hello to all the LARPers out there.
If you don't know what a LARPer is, you better look it up. You might see a fucking picture of Clint Tallman.
Yeah, with I'll have a sword and a helmet with wings on it.
Well, in Indiana, there's probably a lot of LARPers.
Oh yeah. Well, I used to see them at the parks when I lived in bigger cities. I'm not shitting you.
I used to see Chicago. There must be some Adam.
Well, no, that's when I saw them. He's a LARPer. I saw them. I saw LARPers when I lived in the suburbs of Chicago, up in the north suburbs. I used to see LARPers in the parks with swords.
Well, it's kind of like hard for you to say that, you know, Clint claims to have lived in Chicago. I mean, anybody that lives in Evanston doesn't. I mean, yeah, taking the red line every day.
I don't know. I've seen LARPing in Chicago parks.
I lived on Bryn Mawr.
Dressed up like all sorts of like trolls and Lord of the Rings characters and have battles. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Well, hold on. Let's get Clint's take on Chicago before we talk about LARPing around Grant Park.
Well, what take? There's no take. It's just a sewer system. I don't know. it's like if you were to shit in a toilet, then wherever that shit goes, it ends up in Chicago. That's like humanity. Just like this shit goes there.
Well, what about the state of Illinois, Adam? What's going on with that? I mean, you guys, okay, the recall of Newsom. Wow. I mean, wow. That does show where California really is in an ideological realm. But Chicago, let's see if Cook County can outdo it in the next round of elections here, boys.
Oh, I don't think it can. I think they're definitely not electing Lori Lightfoot. Lori Lightfoot's done. That's a one-term mayor that everyone literally hates in the city. So she's done.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. Like, the chances of her winning are close to like 9%, 9-10% when they did like all those studies on a potential run. She might not even run because it's like so
what,
low.
What credentials? You don't need credentials to be a politician. You don't need to run for office. But like, what has Lori Lightfoot done to be like in a position to be mayor? Because she seems completely out of her depth and completely incompetent on every level. Not that the other mayors don't seem that way, but man, she seems.
Well, she was the outsider. Lost. She really was. Because if you compare her to all the other candidates were just. You know,
the other guy you said early on last.
Preckwinkle. Yeah, she was a she was a
yeah that guy.
It's a lady.
Preckwinkle. Whatever. It's a they them. Just
it's a G. So there's G Preckwinkle.
Hey, don't bring up G on this podcast. Man,
we're gonna get banned.
Oh no, I'm gonna become a secessionist. So, anyways, on to Preckwinkle.
Yeah, she's just a corrupt individual. She's like a Cook County president, more or less. She runs the county, so she knows real shady stuff. And she's just been known to be shady, and, I mean, she did deals with anyone and everyone. She argued with Rahm Emanuel, and, you know, that gave her some street cred, I guess, because everybody hated Rahm Emanuel. But she's so corrupt that everybody's just like, no, we're going to vote for somebody completely opposite of you. And at the time, it was Lori Lightfoot. I mean, the police loved her because she was a...
Wait. So you never had like a... I mean, Cook County, okay. Has there been a viable Republican candidate in the last 30 years there?
I'm sure there was. I mean, this was a Republican state.
For the Republican fucking party.
Yeah, but I don't know
for
because
your fucking employment there in the state of Chicago.
Yeah, but Chicago's a completely different animal from the state. The state is like everything below I-80 is red. Like that's just Republican country.
But what's the population like density between like Chicago and the rest of Illinois?
Oh, I don't know. It's not
dense. People living in the state of Illinois.
It's 13 million.
How many people live in this fucking city, Chicago?
3 million, around 3 million people.
Hmm.
So 10 million spread across, a landmass about the size of two Polands. I mean, that's the way I see it. So
one Poland also equates to about 1.5 Colorados.
Hey, while in high school. Lori Lightfoot helped organize a boycott of her school's lunch program over the quality of its pizza. Her boycott was a success, as the school provided more flavorful pizza, and she was punished for the boycott with detention.
Hero.
Rebel rouser.
What a hero. for the school.
Well, I mean, it's Chicago loves their pizza, so it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, oh my god, she stood up for like the rights of pizza. Like,
what is this, Frog High School
definition of pizza?
Oh my god, this is not good pizza. This is New York style.
Yeah, she only won because she was an outsider, and everybody thought she was an outsider, and then it ended up that she was an outsider who wanted to be inside.
Yeah, but I mean, define outsider, what does that even mean? Like, that's like, okay, Donald Trump was like literally the least political politician to ever really be in like a high level of governance. To say you're like an outsider in today's sort of like nomenclature as like a mayoral candidate, like, mm-hmm. what should
that was weird. No, that's the narrative. When the media wants someone to become mayor, that's the narrative they exactly. push to try to make it that way, even if it's not true. Lori Lightfoot was I guess an aide or worked for Barbara Mikulski. I mean, like, yep. That's not really an outsider. An outsider would be like, you're coming from outside both parties, sort of like what AOC did or sort of like what Trump did.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of get rid of the established candidate in that area and then you become, but I don't know that she was like, who was the, you're saying that Preckelwinkle was the established candidate?
Yeah. Preckelwinkle was the one who, you know, was supposed to sweep everything. And then, you know, Lori Lightfoot came along and they're like, oh, this is an outsider and that's what we need because Rahm Emanuel was an insider. And I mean, he ruined the city more or less, even more so than before. And then you had that whole, shooting incident that I can't remember the name of the fella.
McDonald.
They shot him, you know, numerous times. So that completely ruined Chicago residents, you know, belief in the mayor. I mean, think about that. Before Rahm Emanuel, Daley was in power for 30 plus years. And before him, his dad was in power for 30 plus years, and in between them there was Harold Washington. So like
in between the world of shitty Chicago politics, can we get to the bottom as to why the fuck Donald Trump pardoned Rod Blagojevich?
Explain that.
I don't know, to be honest with you. Everyone was real shocked why that happened, because Rod Blagojevich is kind of a piece of shit. I mean, he's just a slimy human being.
Oh, he's just a pure sociopath. There's no way around that. That guy is a complete and utter sociopath. And, you know, he, the things that he was doing, he seems to me to have difficulty processing information. Like, there's something wrong with him. I don't want to diagnose him like psychologically.
Diagnose away.
But he definitely seems to me to be somebody like, he was even on that show, The Apprentice, with Trump, right?
Yeah, that's probably part of it. I assume that.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. He probably liked him and thought, here's what I think. Here's if I was going to like take a guess. Trump probably saw Blagojevich as kind of this fun loving kind of dope that mm-hmm. just didn't really know what he was doing and would just wanted to be loved. And, he got attention, you know, when you're in the Democratic Party machine in Chicago, the way you get love is by being corrupt.
Yep.
And so he got love from doing that. And I think Trump just kind of saw, you know what? He's a doofus that his family wants him back and I'll just let him out. You know, who's he going to hurt? But what he did was ridiculous. Like he shouldn't be out of jail right now.
I mean, he more or less tried to sell Obama's senatorial seat. And then there was just a bunch of other corrupt charges.
So how do you do that? How do you go about selling a Senate seat?
Dude, you have a guy drop you enough money, and then you make sure that there's no opponent to your race in that Senate seat. So let's say a Democrat is giving you the money.
Wait, real quick, Adam. Don't use the word race. I feel microaggressed, but continue.
And then after that, you just have one candidate, and you know, that's it. And then you win. Because there's no opposition, so you automatically win because there's no nobody running against you, be it in the primary or in just a general election.
Well, anyway, that's not why my problem with the Blagojevich pardon is not so much that, okay, yeah, I could see where a president might pardon somebody like Blagojevich because he didn't know. It was a white-collar crime. It's not like he murdered anybody.
And frankly, most Illinoisans don't like Blagojevich because he put the toll roads in. They were supposed to be there for just a couple of years and then ended up they're going to be permanent. So
they'll never be there.
There's
never been a toll road in history that was like, we're going to do this for a couple of years. It's never happened.
And the funny thing is like all the toll roads had Rod Blagojevich's name on it. It said presented to you or given to you by Rod Blagojevich. And it was like, why are you reminding people that you're robbing them? So everyone was just pissed off at him. So,
well, but they weren't pissed off enough to get rid of the toll roads when he left. So,
oh no, no, that was already way out of his control.
Way out of control. It's like you're mad about getting toll roads, and then finally you get rid of the guy that put them in, and you still don't get rid of the toll roads. Like, I can't. It's like you guys are too stupid to even help. Like,
remember that in Illinois, out of the past like 9 mayors, 7 of them have been in prison. So.
Well, hopefully that's not, hopefully that rate that kind of holds true for Lightfoot.
So whatever's coming for Lightfoot, you know, the statistics show that you got a good chance of going to prison after your term ends.
I'm just curious, so like just the whole scenario. So like John Hickenlooper in Denver is just a right twat. I don't know how the he.
What's with these names, dude? We got Hickenlooper, we got Pricklewinkle, Hickenlooper, Pricklewinkle, yeah. Lightfoot. Can we get a normal name? Can we get like Smith?
I don't know who that would be, but honestly, though, I don't understand. Like, so typically, you think about like somebody who becomes like hyper successful, whatever, has a lot of moxie, whatever, like a very likable, you know, kind of person, you know, fits all the bills, right? Lightfoot has none of those. How did she even get into the conversation of being the fucking mayor of one of the greatest cities in the United States?
I'm telling you, the big thing is that people didn't vote for her as much as they voted against Preckwinkle.
Right, that's
like the Biden thing. They didn't vote for Biden. They voted against Trump, quote unquote.
Look, nobody voted for Biden, let's be honest. Second of all.
Dude, 82 million people voted for him.
Yeah, and I fucking, you know, have a 13-inch penis. We all know that's a lie. You know, the real deal is this, is like, if you get into the conversation, right, it's like, how the fuck did she even enter, how did she even become a candidate? It makes zero sense.
She came off real, real intelligent in the debates.
Again, Adam, that's
I'm
not.
I'm just telling you what happened. Like, she was a completely different candidate than she was, is a mayor. Like, the promises were so lofty that everyone's like, holy shit, after Rahm Emanuel's corruption, we might have somebody legit. Like, and, this is at a time where all this, like, Me Too stuff was happening, all this, trans rights and lesbian rights and all that. And she was just perfect for the zeitgeist.
Yeah, she's the perfect LARPer for a LARP contest.
Yeah, okay, that's really what it was.
That's what it was.
Did you guys dress up as Beetlejuice or what? Like, is that what she's LARPing? Or?
And remember, she had huge support from the Chicago Police Department because she was like on the task force. She was part of the board member. She was like, she started off her career as a part of the Chicago Police Department. She did like the professional standard stuff. So she was really loved, and you know, if you get the support from the Chicago Police Department, that's like 2/3 of the battle.
That's such bullshit. Like, first of all, there's no cop in the world that loves somebody in compliance. A, B, like, I'm reading her shit right now. Like, dude, I am just flabbergasted that she.
Jeff, remember when we saw her and you waved to her?
I did see her. We could have done the deed right there, Adam. Publish that on the internet. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, at least Mayor Pete's, like, handsome, so I can see that. Lori Lightfoot, what a fucking...
No, Mayor Pete is astronomically off the charts intelligent, like, on a different level of intelligence. The problem is that he's...
A sociopath.
He is a box ticker of the highest order. He's just checking the boxes, whatever the establishment wants him to do.
What do you mean, Clint? He's the Secretary of Transportation, Clint.
He knows all about the roads.
Wait. So why is Mayor Pete astronomically intelligent? I'm just curious.
Well, he speaks like 8 languages fluently. He is a Rhodes scholar. Yeah. By the standard definition of like what you can achieve academically in U.S. society, whether you think that's a sign of a genius or not, he ticks all the boxes. He's musical. He can play instruments at a high level. He speaks many languages. Everybody knew he was a boy genius when he went to school here locally. My brother was in his class. Everybody knew that he was like off the charts. Like, you know, tested in every. On every metric he's measured, you'd consider him, you know, top of the, you know, I think he was Harvard Law School?
I'm not sure.
Or not law.
He's doing Harvard school. BA.
Harvard Business is what he was.
No. He just Harvard.
His bachelor's is from Harvard.
Yeah. Bachelor's. Right.
With going back to Lori Lightfoot, just for a moment, this weekend in Chicago, she came out and she's like, you know, if the numbers go up in Chicago with COVID, we're going to have to shut everything down, blah, blah, blah. She did, you know, that spiel. Meanwhile, this weekend, the police, the Chicago Police Department released a warning to all the citizens that are in Chicago and you know, all the residents that this might be a rough weekend because there's a Mexican Independence, there's a Bears game, a Sox game, a bunch of, there's Riot Fest and a bunch of other events, including Guns N' Roses concert. And the police are going to try to do the best to help all the people that, you know, that are in need. Well, it turned out yesterday and the night before that, you know, this whole Mexican independence thing, the roads are just wild. The people are driving, you know, in the against traffic. There's, you know, people smoking dope in the streets, people yelling at each other. There's close to like 200 plus accidents just over the past couple of days because all these people are on top of the cars and they're sliding off when, you know, when the car stops. And Lori Lightfoot is just like, oh, well, you know, this is fine. This is fine. Without, you know, saying like, Adam, the police department is going to do something about this.
So I just have a question.
Pure chaos that just is literally quick. Caused by the inability to control events. you know, have three or four events every weekend. It's just happening all at once. So the city's in pure chaos.
When she was interviewed about the issue, about the pure chaos, was it a white person that interviewed her? Or is she still not allowed to speak to white people?
I think it was a Hawaiian toad that interviewed her. I think it's only amphibians are capable of interviewing her now.
I think it was a Pokemon. Hey, so you remember, you guys remember when Lori Lightfoot was recorded on that... like the city board or the city council meeting, mm-hmm. and Lopez, who's like, he's very against Lightfoot and her policies. And Lopez is like saying, hey, this is during the George Floyd riots. And he's like, uh-huh. Hey, the lockdowns are just, they're creating more tension, more chaos. There's people he's like, I got gangsters walking down the street with AK-47s. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you going to do about it? And she's like, I mean, he's like, I got gangbangers. This is him. This is what he's saying. I got gangbangers with AK-47s walking around right now, just waiting to settle some scores. And what are we doing? What are we going to do? And what do we tell residents other than good faith people stand up? It's not going to be enough. And then, like, she didn't answer the question. And he's like, I need an answer. This is not something you ignore. And she, like, wouldn't say anything. And then Lori Lightfoot responded. So this is the mayor of Chicago. This is, like, the level of quality that you get from a city like Chicago. I think this is Lori Lightfoot. I think you're 100% full of shit is what I think. And Lopez responds, fuck you then. Who are you to tell me I'm full of shit? Maybe you should come out and see what's going on. And then she says, if you think we're not ready and we stood by and let the neighborhoods go up, there's nothing intelligent I can say to you. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I understand you want to preen. Mayor, you need to check your fucking attitude. That's what you need to do, Lopez replied. Chicago is such a freaking clown show.
Dude, we're literally just, you know, like one event removed from somebody throwing a shoe at the mayor.
Oh, it's like what a clown show Chicago is. And like the fact that you have a city that big and you have all of these white liberals that are so beta and so like they just want to be led and told what to do, and you know they want the symbol of politics to represent, you know, a good strong minority that can lead them, and they're just all sort of afraid of being called racist, or I don't understand what the problem is. Like why does I don't understand why. Because what it looks like they're doing in places like Chicago is it looks like they are saying, okay, from now on, we can only have, same with New York City, we can only have minority candidates from here forth. Like, we won't consider anybody else. Not that having, like, a white candidate is going to make it better. They're probably going to get somebody like the guy up in Portland or the, you know, these types. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they're starting to slowly introduce like a litmus test. Like, you've got to be these things if you even want to run in our city.
That's just, that's the same, you know, anything, any, I mean, that's why, I mean, at least, you know, Adam can hoist the LGBTQ flag when he's applying for government jobs.
That's right.
Is that right, husband?
No.
I'm definitely going to use it. I'm going to say I'm some sort of made up sexual experience fella.
That if you do that now, you get canceled. Like if you hold up the LGBTQ flag, you get canceled because it's not the LGBTQIAC.
It's the whole alphabet flag.
I missed that one.
Just so you guys know, the data came out for how many people just got killed and shot up to today in Chicago. We got total number of people shot 107. Total homicides by shooting 22. That's just the past 6 days.
Yeah, and guess what? When we talk about, this is a little bit off topic, but if we talk, because I was out shooting guns yesterday.
Good in times. Chicago?
No.
Were you in Grant Park the other day?
I was in a small rural town in Indiana, so it was completely above board. But in Chicago, like all of these murders, these gangland, I guess gangland killings, but a lot of them are murders because they're doing drive-bys and shooting up, you know, picnics, and they're shooting up, you know, family gatherings and that kind of stuff. They're all being...
Well, Lori Lightfoot's going to put a stop to that because she said she's going to sue the gangs. So good luck.
Oh, yeah. That's going to work. So they're all using, whether they're using a rifle or whether they're using handguns, all of them are semi-automatic.
Yep.
Now, what the gun control folks are doing and the language that they're using is they're saying we want to ban, like even Biden, they're saying we want to ban semi-automatic weapons. This is a tactic that's being used to convince people that don't understand firearms that, you know, well, semi-automatic is dangerous. We're not going to allow it. Well, every single gun in America is semi-automatic. Like, I mean, unless you're talking about a hand loader, like a, you know, bolt action rifle with just a single loader.
Or a six shooter. You
know, even a six shooter technically is semi-automatic if it's
Is that semi-automatic, really?
Well, because you pull the trigger and then the barrel or the...
Rotates, I guess,
It rotates and then you let go and then you pull the trigger again and then you let go and then you pull the trigger again. So it's semi-automatic for six shots.
Wow, that is such a ridiculous definition of it then.
Well, that's what they keep saying, semi-automatic. They want to get rid of semi-automatic. And then, like, you talk to other people and they say, we need to get rid of the AR-15, like AR-15. Okay, well, AR-15s are, all they are is a rifle that is semi-automatic and it holds a big magazine. It's not...
Banana clip.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like the what they're doing is they're just using, this is what they always do on the left. The right's not very good at it. The left, because I think the right tries to use clear language to explain things, even though they're bad at that. But the left is pretty good at knowing
language, manipulating narrative and definitions
by using language in ways that they know can change minds. So like if you say, hey, the weapons that were used at this school shooting or at this thing, this is semi-automatic weapons. That's the problem, semi-automatic. Then they start to introduce bills to get laws passed to restrict semi-automatic. Well, every single gun in America is semi-automatic. I mean, not everyone. Like, obviously, there's some...
Yeah, generally though. Yeah.
But generally, almost every gun that anybody owns in their house for personal safety is a semi-automatic weapon. So they're using this language, and it's just a manipulation tactic to try to get people that don't own guns and aren't really that, you know, pro-gun to go, yeah, that's a good idea, we need to get rid of that. But semi-automatics are used in every single mass killing.
It's time to just start redefining it and calling them like semi-analog. They're semi-analog. They're not semi-automatic.
It's a language. I think you just have to start educating. Like my brother came over and he was talking about how AR-15s, you know, should be banned, assault rifles should be banned. I said, Chad, every single rifle that you buy at the store to go hunting, every hunting rifle, if it's not bolt action, like single loader or a muzzle loader, it's a semi-automatic. Like you pull the trigger and then it reloads another bullet into the chamber and then you pull the trigger again. That's semi-automatic. It's boom, boom.
Yeah,
boom,
but I would just say
boom.
Like the level of you know, the amount of rounds that you can carry should be limited. I mean, I just think it's wild to be able. I mean, dude. I mean, you guys have shot AR-15s. I mean, they're like toys, basically, just meant for fucking mass murder. Like, there's no kickback on them at all. I mean, I don't know, man. I kind of sit in that crowd. I'm like, I don't know if people should have, you know, AR, you know, 15s or whatever. I don't know.
Well, how am I going to kill my ducks, dude? How am I going to kill my ducks?
I don't know,
I used to be with you, Jeff, but I'm not anymore.
Not in the sense, like, what do you, I mean, first of all, like, what's the utility of an AR-15 for the most part, right? Like, I think a lot of guns, you know, again, like, what's the utility of, like...
Okay, well, what's the limit? What's the limit? Like, what should be the limit?
I don't know. I mean, for instance, like, I think that if you buy a gun in the United States, I mean, it's hard to say, right? I can't enter into this
anymore. I'm uneducated on this issue, so I can't really...
I just believe in the sense that, like, there are a bunch of psychopaths in this country, you know? So, yes, so obviously you should have the right to protect yourself. But again, like, the other side of the coin is, like, I mean, God, you can walk into, like, a Dick's Sporting Goods and then, like, whatever it is, 48, 72 hours later, like, you can walk out of the store with an AR-15.
Yeah, but you see, it takes time for you to get the gun. Meanwhile, voting, they just send it to you. I think that's the crazy thing, is that all these people who say that guns should be restricted, they're already restricted enough, in my opinion. These are the same people who say that, you know, voting rights aren't open enough. Meanwhile, like, what do you want? You want everybody to get a handgun sent in the mail? Because, I mean, it's the same thing, right? If you want everybody to vote, and on the other hand, you want nobody to have a gun, it's like... Which one's more important? Because to me, is the security of the voting as opposed to the security of having a gun.
Let's clarify it more. I mean, if you're living in an area with really strict gun control policies, mm-hmm. those places have the most shootings per capita, the most murders per capita. So
real quick. So an AR-15 clip holds 30 rounds. Like, you're never going to go hunting with that. I mean, unless you're looking at it as, I mean, I know people have done it, but I mean, if you're looking to light up an elk, like with, like it's some sort of, you know, gangland shooting, you know, you're probably not gonna be able to eat it, but.
Yeah, but what if I don't want to go hunting? If I'm just a gun enthusiast that likes to shoot 30 rounds at a target. I mean, like, the problem is that those rights should not be restricted for responsible gun owners. And the problem is that the government's setting the guidelines, they're not going to ever stop. It's going to always be more. Well, yeah, 30 rounds is too much. Now 20 rounds is too much. But now 10 rounds is too much. You know what? 5 is too much. You know what? 2 is too much.
I feel like it's a risk to society to
the biggest risk. No, the biggest risk is Australia. No, the biggest risk is Australia or England. If you become like Australia and England, okay, even if you have a few shootings every year because some crazy guy, like that is like almost, in my opinion, like you're not going to have zero risk. You're always going to have somebody that's going to get a hold of a gun if they're like allowed to be freely sold and bought in the United States. But if you become like Australia, then look what Australia is now. You know, that's partly because these people have no ability to defend or stand up to the state at all. Like for me, firearms are not like, oh, it's just for hunting. No, the Constitution says they're to protect yourself from the overreach of the state. If the overreach of the state. Then, yeah, you know what? The guys running around in the hills of Afghanistan that beat the shit out of the U.S. Army, those guys had AR-15 style semi-automatic rifles. I don't see the problem with citizens in the U.S. having that.
Let's be very clear about Afghanistan. Nobody beat the shit, quote unquote. Look, man, that was a 20-year play to just drain the economy. Well,
yes,
funnel capital into just like the military, you know, just... industrial complex, whatever you want to call it.
Well, you can say that the U.S. kneecapped themselves, but it doesn't matter. The Afghans lost that war.
Like,
there's no definitive losing anything, right?
Dude, lost that war.
That's a giant L.
It's not losing a war. It's a transition to where we're going to go next, right? So the idea would be, like, fundamentally speaking, like, if it was about just all-out domination, right? Like, if the U.S. military ever felt that that was the actual goal it was trying to do, and the idea of co-optation, re-governance, democratic principles, la, 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 re-education, they could have actually probably done much, much more. You know, the idea principally amongst, I would say, since really the 1960s, has been to always keep the United States in some level of perpetual war.
Yeah.
It's transitioning, though, from the idea of guns and guards now to a different realm. That's probably going to be more around different facets of energy, intelligence, cybersecurity, shit like that, right?
Okay,
like,
but what does that have to do with us losing in Afghanistan? Because we lost Afghanistan.
I think the better question would be, why would that dictate us pulling out, right? What is the narrative that's taking place amongst the IC that says, like, okay, this is no longer a viable financial avenue for us to be partaking in, right? Like, I don't know. I think that's
part of it. I think the opium, the opium aspect of it is big. I think it's also an aspect that nobody talks about, because once we went into Afghanistan, all these opioid companies here in the United States made big profits because they bought opium on the cheap from Afghanistan. And then they resold it as Oxycontin and everything else. And they made such huge profits that all the politicians behind them also made some sort of kickback. And then once we're out of here, remember, first there was this whole kickback from or blowback from the opioid crisis, and then after that we're like, well, I guess we got to move out of Afghanistan. And I think those two are tied in some sort of way, at least in like a 10-20% range with regards to why we left.
Well, I'll tell you though as well, because like, terror cells in and of themselves, like, dude, nobody cares about Afghanistan anymore. Like the Taliban is bullshit. Like,
well, China does.
Yemen. Everybody's worried about Yemen. Like, honestly. I mean, this is real. Like,
listen, we're only worried about Yemen because Saudi Arabia wants to expand its oil empire. That's really what it is.
Yemen is a much bigger picture issue than Afghanistan is. And I'm curious to see why. I mean, I don't know. You know, the other thing is, too, is like, you know, I heard some pundit come on. Okay, so this is kind of a side story to this. And, I listened to, it's called like The Coffee House or whatever. It's a daily or like tri-weekly podcast held by The Spectator. It's really good, listeners, if you're interested. It's very good. But they held like kind of this liberal pundit the other day, and it was hilarious. He was just like outright defending Biden and his ability and in what took place. And to me, I don't know how you guys feel about the Afghanistan pullout, but it makes zero sense. Like, that boondoggle was literally what took place in Vietnam in 1975.
I wanted to pull out from Afghanistan 20 years ago.
Like, yeah, no, for sure. My
position has
been there.
My position has been to pull out for 20 years. The problem is not that Biden pulled out. That's fine.
But the way he did it was interesting.
Yes, the problem is the incompetent or deliberately incompetent, deliberately, I don't know what the negotiations were between the Taliban and the U.S. officials, but there was some sort of agreement that must have been made. They were probably talking. I don't know whether it looks like they left behind all this equipment on purpose.
It looks like it too. And they let out all the head guys who are in leadership. That had to be on purpose as well. Because these are in some ways our guys now. These are like the Mujahideen on a national level that are running Afghanistan.
But there's also arguments like, okay, you got the Taliban who are strict religious, faction or sect.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, they're going to rule with a religious iron fist. But then you've got the Northern Alliance that was our allies who were raping little boys like regularly. Like they said, like, child rape was like a normal part of their culture and part of their thing. And the Taliban apparently is not into that, or at least that's not allowed under
Sharia
their
law.
Their form of Sharia law. And so they are going around outlying. And meanwhile, the United States was actually, in order to stay in the good graces of the Northern Alliance and some of the other sects that were working with the U.S. against the Taliban, they were literally guarding the encampments and bringing and allowing them to bring in little boys to be raped. I mean, this was like a normal thing. And the U.S. was like complicit. Not only were we like guarding their opium fields, we were also guarding them so they could basically abuse and torture children. I mean,
because we respect their culture, Clint. We respect their culture.
Right. So,
well, wait. Hold on, guys, real quick. I want to say one thing as well. One thing that is kind of like flippantly reported but not said often, that that attack that took place on the base?
Yep.
That was the UK's fault. Like, I want that to be publicly known. That gate was only used for British military services, letting them in and out of that. What was the name of the base there?
Oh, the are you talking about the airfield?
Yeah.
No, the gate. You mean it?
Where the Americans died, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that was just the airfield. That was the airport. They were guarding the airport.
That wasn't the British fault. That was the American leaders had stationed our soldiers outside the gate in a very like obvious.
No, nobody was supposed to go in and out of that gate. The only people that were allowed to go in and out of it were the British soldiers. So, I mean, tell me why that's the case.
So, who directed our troops to be stationed outside the gate?
Whatever, it's probably some NATO forces. But what I think is interesting.
No way. Yeah, U.S.
That sounds fishy.
On that.
I don't get it. So the US British were supposed to control it, but the Americans were outside the gate of a British-controlled gate. Occam's razor doesn't make any sense on that.
No, the U.S. forces were definitely instructed to go out there by our own leadership. Our leadership is a disaster right now. They haven't fought in any kind of war to sharpen them, and they're just like, you know, they don't have any experience in war, and it just seems like that from the top down, the thing is just a corrupt. You know, we have a weak army. We have a weak military right now because of the leadership, not because of the soldiers that are signing up.
I think strategically there's something missing, but
like those guys are badasses and they want to go and they want to do their best and they want to, like, you know, work hard and they want to they want to come out of it being refined and being, you know, a tough warrior. And then the leadership is, really just kind of all washed up and kind of, you know, they never won a war. They're just kind of sad characters.
So Britain coordinated closely with the United States and did not push. They say they did not push to keep the gate open at Kabul airport, where suicide bomber killed 13 U.S. troops and scores of Afghan civilians. Right. A political report on Monday.
Said scores, American forces, 180 scores.
A political report on Monday said American forces decided to keep the Abbey Gate open longer than they wanted to allow Britain to continue evacuating its personnel. It was completely some sort of bullshit decision
by the U.S., by our leadership.
It said the U.S. kept the gate open.
Was pressured to keep the gate open to literally let the Great Britain, British forces continue to leave themselves, right? Like, that was a whole debate. I don't know if you guys are following rather closely. The international community was up in arms because the United States was like, fuck this, we're done. And like France, Germany, Great Britain were all pissed off because, again, they have zero capabilities of fucking defending themselves. I mean, this is like one of the bigger issue problems. You talk about, you know, the European defense forces and shit. Like, they're hyper dependent upon the, you know, military apparatus from the United States.
100%.
And this is something that should be fucking changed. I mean, look, there's so many issues. Fucking issues with Afghanistan that just like, literally, it's if you think this is not one of the greatest fuck ups in, say, the last 10 years, I can't help you.
Like, but I think this fuck up is intentional. I think if you're looking at all of what's happening in Afghanistan, and then you look at it through the prism of the art of war, what you see is you leave behind chaos, so your enemies, Pakistan, China, Russia, and Iran, are left with this giant mess on their doorstep. And while you're doing this, you're in a way helping out India, who's like, you know, fuck Pakistan. We want to be an ally of the United States. So in a way, we're helping out India. Meanwhile, we're over in the Horn of Africa in the Congo doing whatever the fuck it is that we're doing over there while nobody else is looking at those locations. Over down in Australia, we're selling them nuclear subs. So whatever's happening, we're playing some sort of 4D chess with, be it China or whatever the perceived enemy is for the next so-called, you know, wave of conflict. And I think what's happening in Afghanistan is 100% intentional and in a way very clever from a military standpoint.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Afghanistan...
It's just not marketable. Marketable.
Who gives a fuck, dude? Afghanistan in the 1980s, we all know what took place. Like, Russia's not going to get involved to that extent
again. Oh, no. But they have to worry about it.
Everything else, maybe. I mean, honestly, they have bigger issues. Pakistan, you know, is a way bigger fucking issue.
Oh, yeah.
Afghanistan.
For sure.
A bunch of people, I mean, look, man, terror cells, it's funny. What I hate about the international news media, the Western news media for that fact, is that
they think
that Afghanistan is this, like, it's like the epicenter of every terrorist faction in the world. Like, this is where...
Oh, no. Pakistan, Saudi Arabia. This is where we have,
like,
a terrorist
summit every year. They all go to Kabul and they hang out in the hills and they plan terror. Like, that is not true.
You want to know what I hate about the Western media?
Everything?
I think everything. I think they're the most evil force in our society right now. But I would say, in regards to the Afghanistan, this sort of, like, global theater of events that's unfolding before us... All roads lead to China. Like, everything that's happening right now, it all is centered around what is China doing. And I think that it's difficult to separate out, like, what are we doing that benefits China and what are we doing that will long-term hurt China. But I do definitely think, and this is, I don't want to be like an Alex Jones ranting conspiracy theorist, but I do believe there are many, many, many members of government and many members of the military who have been bought and paid for by China. They are absolutely working in the interest of China. I don't know exactly who they are. I wouldn't name names because I don't want to get in trouble. But I think there's a lot of folks that are wrapped up in think tanks, wrapped up in different organizations that are 100%, if you were to follow the money trail, if you could, would go back to all this big money from China. I mean, look, China already owns Hollywood. Hollywood actors will not say anything against China. They own the NBA. They won't speak out against anything that China does, even though they have concentration camps and they have, you know, that. So, you know, businesses are afraid because they don't want to lose deals.
Yeah, I think this is a soft power move by China. So yeah. China purchased in a way our soft power and is using it against us. And in a way, this is like a miniature start to a something of a Cold War, because I mean, technically China is not really too much of a threat military wise, but it is with regards to purchasing power and control over, you know, as I said, soft power. So I do agree. Well, maybe,
but I think soft power would be more defined, right? Like, so like debt diplomacy is like the name of the game for the Chinese, right? And
yeah, but that could be easily wiped out by a few well-placed bombs.
No, their number one weapon right now. No, their number one weapon right now for soft power is that they have the market buying power to they can literally destroy corporations and they can destroy Hollywood. Like they can release a Hollywood movie, and that Hollywood movie is only going to make its money off of China because Americans are not going to the theater anymore.
Well, so, put in perspective, though. So, like for instance, like that's true, right?
I mean,
like,
they took down Jack Ma. Man's a billionaire.
Yeah, hold on, but a billionaire compared to a state is nothing, right?
I guess
you
that's
know,
true.
Alibaba. In and of itself, right? Like the stock was 320, now it's like 160, right? In literally the period of like 8 months, it's been halved. You know, this idea of the new sort of data security laws that have been released and so on and so forth, these are things that will continue to affect, I would say, state-owned enterprises, also, you know, private sector industries. But the idea that the Chinese, what they try to do with the Belt and Road Initiative is really just like, you know, it's kind of like indentured servitude, right? They do leasing terms similar to what you would have with, you know, the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank, right? But the lending terms are so egregious that they know at the end of the day, like, they are going to basically, like, the warm water ports in, like, Sri Lanka, in a period of, like, 10 years, they're going to end up owning those because they're going to default on their loans, so on and so forth, right? But the problem then becomes this, right? To what extent, like, mathematically, if you have a bunch of debt that's scattered upwards of the trillions of dollars that people are defaulting on. Like, what is that going to do to the apparatus that is the CCP? To me, fundamentally, from an economics point, they are going to run into hyper-recession.
Oh, for sure.
Keep going down this path. So it's kind of like they're kind of paving a road to self-destruction.
No, they're paving a road to make me rich because my Ethereum and Bitcoin.
But Ethereum and Bitcoin, you know, as Christine Lagarde said the other day, you know, these are not currencies. These are highly volatile assets, right? So that could be similar take on the idea of, say, like a housing market or so on and so forth. Now, I'm not going to jump into the realm of what could happen with Bitcoin, what could not happen with Bitcoin.
Why not?
I have no idea, as nobody really knows. I mean, we see what's happening right now in El Salvador, right?
Everybody knows. What do you mean nobody knows? Everybody knows. Everybody knows what happens. Dude, when the dollar is devalued to the point where it's not worth anything, everybody knows what happens to stable currency that can't be inflated.
But to turn it on its ear, right? Like, you still value, right, a crypto through the identity, through the pathway of a sovereign currency. So if the dollar dies, right, then everything else dies with it. So to state
no, it doesn't.
That you're going to... Right, maybe.
You know, that's interesting. You're not going to immediately redefine the market. What would happen if the dollar died?
If the dollar died, then
the dollar dies. I'm buying as many fucking cans. Hold on, Clint. Let me finish. If the dollar dies, I'm buying as many fucking bullets and cans of beans as I can have and digging a hole really fucking deep and buying a lot of cement, because that's going to be the only value. A, rice, beans, complete protein, bullets to shoot people from stealing my rice and beans, and then I'll have shelter from the rain and like animals and shit.
Yeah, what do you think I have? I already have that. But here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. I already have that in my Indiana compound. But here's the thing, man.
Compound?
Like I got the food stores. I'm saving up there. I've got the ammunition. I'm saving up there. I'm looking for property. I was just out at my buddy's. He's got about, you know, I don't know, like what's he got? Like 40 acres and a mule. Like for me, it's that you will have, like, nobody can really I mean, if the power grid goes down and there's no way to, like, you know, that's what you're talking about. But you still have, once the power grid gets turned back on, the blockchain will still exist. Like, it's still it will still be there, and you will still have value, and whatever amount of Bitcoin somebody wants, because it's valued, because it's stable, because it's not inflationary, because it's a limited supply, that is going to be like, hey, I'll give you this much of a fraction of a Bitcoin for that, you know, barrel of apples that you've got over there. That's how it's going to work, because the dollar is going to be irrelevant, because it already is. The dollar is already devalued to nothing. The only reason why it's got any perceived value at all is false confidence, because it's a petrodollar, and because it's the global, you know, it's the greenback.
I think a petrodollar is kind of like a stretch at this point. I mean, indeed, yes, for sure. Like, it's hyper dependent upon that. But now it's become kind of valued in several different ways. I don't really think that, like, I mean, this is just me, you know, pushing hot air to an extent. But so Adam said earlier about soft power, right? And you think about the renminbi and you think about the euro, right? You think of the Japanese yen. Okay, like, these were currencies, like, everybody was always saying, like, the renminbi is going to take over the greenback, and it's going to be, like, the new international monetary mechanism or vehicle. Never happened. Euro, never happened. To overhaul what is principally the U.S. dollar at this point in time would take a fucking cataclysmic event. Nothing to which the extent we're seeing right now.
It I don't know. A third world shit. War could probably crush it.
Sure, but Adam, again, barring absolute annihilation of humankind, really, like, that's the extent to which you're going to have to do to really
that's overhaul. Not the point, though.
But the point is this, well, Clint, I don't think that you can't create value in other vehicles, assets, whatever. You can, certainly, and that's been proven. Like, this is actually happening, right? But in terms of what you're talking about, an absolute overhaul where the U.S. dollar is no longer the main currency being used for exchange globally, I'd say not in our lifetime.
It's not going to happen. No, because it's not going to happen with one cataclysmic event. It's going to happen slowly over time, because the U.S. dollar is slowly using value. Like, nobody puts their money in a bank anymore to get interest. That doesn't happen anymore.
All right. So, question for you guys. Suppose.
So where are people going to? Here's my question. Uh-huh. Where are people going to put the majority?
Well, hold on, Clint. Why is the stock market at all time high then?
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, because this is based upon the idea of valuation, which takes place through investment, right? So that means you have an all-time high of investment, right, in greenback-backed securities, right?
Okay,
so that means,
but look, sure. But look at your return. If you just do a five-year, like, or let's say a three-year or five-year running average on, you put your money into some big stocks.
Say it's the number one ETF, right?
Let's not say the number one ETF, because most people that are investing are just investing in, like, some sort of retirement portfolio or something like that. So let's just say you put your money in that.
It's ETFs out, right? Exchange traded funds are the number one vehicle for people under the age of 60 right now. ETFs.
That's under the age of 60.
Over mutual funds. Well, mutual funds, bonds, very, like, low risk are people over 60. ETFs typically are people who are non-discretionary accounts.
All right. Good. Let's break this down. Okay, you've got your money in an ETF, whatever, okay, over 5 years. What's your percentage, your average percentage of growth on that ETF?
Probably 10% a year.
Okay, now add inflation.
Sure.
You're not making any money off that shit, like, in the long run, unless you're a multimillionaire that can turn around and sell it in a week. But if you have your money in Bitcoin or Ethereum or maybe another asset, one of these decentralized finance assets, in 5-10 years, not only are you going to have your money in that specific token, but you know it can't be inflated. And you also are going to get a way higher return on percentage-wise. It's probably going to be double.
It's also inflated because you're still exchanging it for dollars.
Well, you don't have to, though. You can exchange it for something else.
Maybe, but still, okay, fine. Again, like, but it's not.
And people can accept it. No, people can accept it as a currency.
Okay,
right?
Clint, when was the last time you bought something with Ethereum, other than another crypto?
Well, I don't use it as a means of exchange right now.
Right, so that's my point. In order for it to actually create value in that sense, it needs to be exchanged in that form of value, right? Well, that form of whatever.
Just because I'm not using it as that means of exchange doesn't mean that I can't. I could. There are people that accept Ethereum and accept Bitcoin, and it's adoption. It's growing.
My point is, for one week, Clint, you should try to go out and live exclusively off of crypto for all of your groceries, all of your diapers, all of your bills.
Right, but that's not my point. My point is not that we don't need to use the U.S. dollar right now as a sort of a practical means of exchange. Like, it's a pragmatism thing right now. My point is that in 10, 15 years, would you rather have had your money in an ETF, or would you rather have had your money in Bitcoin and Ethereum? And I think the answer to me is pretty clear. Like, at this point, like,
I don't know. I mean, I've had money in crypto for 5 years, and it's gone really high, and it's also pitted out. And the swings are so high, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, for sure, Clint. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you, really, to the end of the day. Like, but I think, you know, manage your risk appetite. You know, The end of the day, really, it's about, you know, this is why markets are interested in like emotive constructs, right? Like, who the fuck knows what the value is, right? The value of a good is what the bearer will pay or whatever, right? Like, what's that saying? I don't know. It's too early in the morning for me to think of it. But the point being is that the value is based upon what the market dictates, right? So I don't know. Maybe this will transform. We'll see. You see these big players getting involved now. But then that's the other question, right? Like, crypto was supposed to be decentralized, but now centralizing powers are getting involved through different forms, whether they're iBanks or
in
regulatory shit, Clint. So then it's like losing.
Let's make it simple.
It's direct value, right?
Let's make it really simple, Jeff. If you had put $10,000 in Ethereum back in 2017 when you and I were on the phone talking about cryptocurrency, if you had put $10,000 into Ethereum back in 2017 and you could, you know, withdraw it right now, that would be, you'd be doing really well. You'd be very happy. If you put that $10,000 into
the same thing for Tesla, yeah. You can say the same thing for any of these companies, Google, Apple, fucking Amazon, man. Like, sure, there are heavy hitters, man, but that's not my point.
Yeah, that's not my point. My point is that, yeah, you can pick a maybe on a sea of many different investments. You might be able to pick a Netflix or somebody that like blows it up, and like Amazon, you might be able to pick a winner. That's not my point. My point is that if you would have put it into this sound cryptographic currency, then and we've seen it with all of these, like, you know, 2017 till now, Bitcoin or Ethereum, the kind of two flagship cryptocurrencies. There's others that are coming up, but those two, you would be doing way better just because you only have a limited amount of choices with this crypto in terms of, yeah, you can speculate and go with some crazy unheard of ones. But in the market, like with dollar market, like when you're talking about investments and you're looking at like all these big companies, that's like in my opinion, that's a much greater risk. Yeah, there's going to be volatile fluctuations in every market, but like with cryptocurrency especially. But I'm saying if you play the long game, I don't think there's any risk, in my opinion. If you were to put it in right now and then 5 years we were to look at it, you'd be very happy.
Well, I would say you'd be better off throwing that money into like Tesla or something, right? Or, you know, I think you play the dip on Alibaba once all this regulatory stuff is kind of comes to a, you know, whatever's going to happen with that, is it's going to be a very highly valued stock.
Backed by US dollars. It's all backed by US dollars.
Yeah, but Clint, I mean, it's just hyperbolic to say that, you know, this is going to be an evolutionary change, right, in the monetary system, to the extent to
which you're talking. We'll see. Record this conversation. Adam, record this conversation.
I'm recording.
Clint, it is fucking recorded. Dummy.
No. Make sure. Do back it up. Make a backup copy.
This is literally recorded and going to be published on some fucking dumpy website. But look, man. You know, at the end of the day, I think, yeah, man, I don't know. I think this is why you should be, you know, to an extent, playing both markets. You know, I don't think you need to be all in on one or the other. So, I don't know, man. But anyways, back to, you know.
Okay, let's go back to AR-15s. So, why don't you have any stock in firearms? Yeah, if you have stock in firearms right now, you're about to you're going to be doing really well. But my point with the whole firearms thing is that I think the play of the gun control advocates and the lobby is that they will always say, okay, 30 clips is too much. But then you know the next move is, okay, now 20 clips or 20 rounds is too much. Okay, now 10. There's never any repeal of any of this shit. It's always like more and more and more and more and more. And my point is, okay, draw the line in the sand. If you go to a small Texas town where like 80% of people are carrying firearms, like let's say they have a sidearm or they have a rifle in their truck, like those communities are not having 30 to 40 murders like the streets of Chicago. They're just, this doesn't happen because everybody learns firearm safety. You know, I was out there with my buddy. He was in the Navy. He has a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old. We were on the range and he was teaching them all of the safety stuff about how you handle the firearm, about, you know, how you respect the range. You never go in front in the range until everybody says range is cold. You put your firearm down. Just all these little things that kids learn that grow up in gun culture and that grow up around them, and they feel safe around guns. They don't look at them as something scary, that something's meant to kill. They look at it as like a thing that you can use for self-defense and a thing that you can use to acquire food. And when you
think you can use a take to a school and shoot it up. like Columbine.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, well, you look, can, man, also look. No, you know, you can also drive your car to the school when everybody's standing for the bus stop and drive over everybody.
There's always devil's advocate here, right? I would say this from my perspective of a risk perspective. I would say I have zero faith in the American society, the American culture. I think people are all on the edge of their fucking seats. This COVID shit, what's going on in the job market, what's going on in inflation, so on and so forth. I think that there's too much risk in society to trust a innumerable number of people with guns.
But isn't that what freedom said, is? A bunch of risk, and you just...
Sorry?
I mean, that's what freedom is, the idea of a bunch of risk.
Freedom is risk.
But yeah, but we're not free. Let's be very clear about that.
I mean, okay, so let's be less free then. That's your solution, is to be less free.
Well, we're less free than I'd say the majority of societies, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know. I've lived all over the world. Lived, not traveled. I would say, barring certain facets of our society, yes, we are less free than I would say many, many, many places. I would say that's the greatest fucking lie told to Americans. We are not a free society by any fucking measure of the stick. So, yeah, you can vote for who? The same people regardless, you know?
There's a spectrum. There's a spectrum. We're free in some respects and not free in other respects. In some countries,
well, look at our fucking journalism right now. It's fucking co-opted, man. It's
pure propaganda.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we dropped precipitously this year, ranking upon fucking our freedom of journalism. Like,
I'm aware of that.
We're in a very bad state with that. Like, I don't think the idea of just owning a gun outright like defines freedom, right? Now, I'm not denying the idea of saying guns should be inherent to sort of the American way and however you want to define a militia and however you want to define the Second Amendment and whatever. We could talk about that for hours on end. But I don't know, man. Like, how much do you trust Jimmy down the street? You got a young boy running around.
That's not my response. That's not the argument.
Right on the whole idea of like you take away 30 bullets, then they're going to try to take away 20, 10, so on. Just look at what they did with tobacco. The anti-tobacco / anti-gun lobby needs to make money. So they're going to continue making up excuses to take away, you know, insert whatever, just so they can continue the battle.
It becomes an industry. It's an industry. It's the same thing with like the homeless industry.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
Yeah. You got people like that are supposed to advocate for the homeless and they've got government jobs. They're not trying to get rid of homeless. They're trying to get more homeless so they can make an argument for why. The same thing with the DEA. The Drug Enforcement Agency, do you think they want to get rid of the drug trade? No, they need it because it justifies their existence. The same thing with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Do you think they want to get rid of racism? No, they don't want to get rid of racism. It's an industry. Racism is an industry.
You guys have read Dead Aid, right? The whole idea of altruism is a fucking industry, right?
Like, yeah.
So define anything. Anything's an industry, right? Everything in the understanding of like this generates profit in U.S. dollars, not crypto, by the way, Clint.
Yeah, but this is a strategy that was invented by the U.S. This is an American strategy that stems from Vietnam and all these groups that came out of the Vietnam War.
Long before Vietnam.
That's when it really riled up. Think about it.
But let's talk about this freedom thing. Like this, because this freedom thing is interesting to me. Like, because basically Jeff is saying, because you can't trust your neighbor to be responsible, therefore you shouldn't have the right to be responsible.
I mean, that's not freedom. To me, logically, it's the same sort of argument that you should wear a mask and be vaccinated because you can't trust the guy next to you.
Right, that's not freedom.
Not at all.
It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing. I would say
replace gun with mask, replace gun with vaccine.
Jimmy down the street might have a mind virus, man.
First of all, gentlemen, I would say that to compare somebody with a fucking literally deadly weapon versus a fucking, you know, benign disease. Right, but Clint, I mean,
millions have died. Don't underplay this.
Didn't Reuters just publish an article saying that 96% of deaths that were reported as deaths of COVID were false? That came out?
Yeah, there were probable deaths. There were probable deaths, but they still counted them as deaths.
So, I mean, you know, whatever. But look, brother, I mean, I don't know. I just think at the end of the day, yes, guns should be allowed. Okay, we'll just say that outright. I think there needs to be rifles, so on and so forth, shotguns.
Where do you draw the line?
If you grow up in Colorado is a hunting culture. People always grew up around guns. Like there were always guns around us when we were kids, and la la la. I didn't really see fucking AR-15s really emerge until, I don't even know. Maybe
an AR-15 is a rifle just like every other hunting rifle.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, look, man, you can actually kill animals with an AR-15. But talk to most people that actually are into just like that's their hobby. the AR-15 is used primarily for fucking going to a range and just shooting the fucking thing, right? Like,
or I don't self-defense. Know
anybody's going out there and shooting it for hunting purposes.
Or self-defense.
So, yeah, but I mean, again, it's like, I don't know. So like, this is like the defining, okay, here's like the principle. It's like, I just feel as though like I'm not that paranoid to the extent to which I feel I need a fucking AR-15, right? Like,
well, if you're not paranoid after 2019 and 2020, then I don't know what will make you paranoid.
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, if you have a gun, you got to be willing to kill somebody. So, I mean, that's another issue. Like,
that's why you go to the range.
But that was an issue, right? With Vietnam, right? The Vietnamese War, and also like the Contras in Nicaragua. Like, they found that like, people were just like shooting the guns into the fucking ground, right? Because they couldn't go through with the act of actually taking a human life. So, first and foremost, if you're actually going to say self defense, you have to have that capability to do that. Most people probably don't, I would say. So that's a different debate, you know, pertaining to like gun ownership. But then there is the level of ability for these guns to, I don't know, America's a fucked up place, man, because there's so many illegal guns anyways, right? So, like, even if you outlawed guns, and guns are in this market, guns will always be in the American culture, right? I just feel as though, I would say I have felt...
You just don't think it's necessary for freedom.
I felt far less safe, for instance, hanging out in the United States than I have virtually anywhere else outside of, say, Mexico.
Okay, let me make an argument to the contrary. The places where you feel less safe in America just happen to be big cities that have the strictest gun control policies that are possible. So when you're in these big cities, they have way more restrictions on guns than anywhere else, especially if you go to more liberal cities. I know that you've lived in mostly maybe conservative cities like in Texas and Florida, but even they have stronger restrictions on firearms than, let's say, if you were in Indianapolis or like an Indiana city where you can, you know, people can carry guns. And I would say even more so like smaller Texas cities or smaller Texas towns where gun carrying is a normal thing. Like I never once did I ever feel safe walking around like Fort Wayne, Indiana or like South Bend, Indiana, like maybe South Bend a little bit more because we have a pretty strong, let's say drug gang part of the town that's like kind of like a thoroughfare from or a stop off point from Detroit and Chicago. So there is a lot of drug running and sort of gang activity. So there are parts of Indiana where I feel parts of South Bend where I feel unsafe, but generally like gun culture towns like in Colorado or like out west or, you know, even in the Midwest, like let's say Iowa, I don't feel unsafe at all in those areas. Where I feel unsafe is places where I'm not allowed to carry.
Where I feel unsafe is where you have a bunch of dipshits that probably have AR-15s rather than just a handgun.
I don't feel unsafe around those people at all.
I would just say this, man. Look, I'm not against it, right? So here's the deal, right? If you're not going to outlaw guns outright, then there's a risk. There is, like, look, man, you say gun control measures. Dude, you think people actually abide by that shit? That's like, it's almost as benign as like the fucking TSA.
Yeah,
right?
One place you
gotta take your shoes off, the other place you don't gotta take your computer out of your back.
You're wrong on that. Law-abiding gun owners follow the laws. They're law-abiding gun owners. They know the laws.
Sure, but black swan events, Clint, that I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the ubiquitous idea that states principally that says, okay, yes, you raised in a conservative culture, and henceforth you will be a responsible gun owner. That doesn't fucking matter to me. What matters to me is that you have the ability to fucking have a bad day and walk into fucking local South Bend, Indiana shopping mall with a fucking 6 banana clips and, you know, 400 rounds and just fucking have your way until you get suicided by a cop. Like, that to me is a fucking risk.
You can also have a bad day and go to the bar and drink 400 beers and get in your car and drive through a city that's with people on the sidewalks.
Well, that's another thing too, man. It's like, that's the other good thing about not living fucking in the United States. You don't need a car typically. So, yeah, I mean, look, man, I'm just saying.
Freedom requires risk.
Okay. Yeah, freedom doesn't require outright. Like, I mean, look, so Clint, are you for or against outlawing fucking bump stocks?
I'm against it.
You're against outlawing bump stocks. So you think that anybody should be able to makeshift automatic rifles in the United States?
Yeah, I think
that's so. That to me just shows you have a much higher level of trust of the behavior and the psychosocial norms than I do of this country.
No, I know that there's risk associated with allowing freedom. But I just think that the founders understood that as well. And that's why they put the Second Amendment in, that they said that the citizenry should be as well armed as possible well-armed militia, well-armed as possible.
You're going to do shit against the U.S. government, let's be honest.
That's not the point. That's
no,
not
I know
point.
It's not the point, the but point, I mean, my point is, not, I know no, it's no, not, no, hold like, on, like, wait, you're saying the wait, point is, if you limit wait, freedoms and these transliterate wait, to something else, just like the wait, whole pronoun thing that Jordan Peterson talked about, right? Like,
hold
I get
on.
It. I get what you're
hold
saying.
Hold on, that's, I'm talking about the slippery slope, but here's what I'm more talking about. You have to break it down more. It's not the federal government that's going to be the one that immediately is going to send the DEA and the ATF to take you out. They might do that, but I think the more immediate concern is when local governments, like Lori Lightfoot, try to say, you can't have any guns. Meanwhile, the gangsters are walking the streets, and like, look at the cities right now. They're literally being robbed in broad daylight, left and right. You know why they're doing that? This is what I did my thesis on in undergrad. I did it on gun control and in Maryland versus... what was it? It was Maryland and I think Connecticut. And I think Maryland had open carry laws and Connecticut had super strict gun control. Where do you think all of the robberies and carjackings and crimes happened? They all happened right on the border of Connecticut because everybody knew they could just go there. Nobody's armed and it's a safe place to commit your criminal activity. They didn't have nearly as much property crime in Maryland because everybody's armed up. And that was what I took from the FBI crime data statistics. Now, that could be some false correlation. I don't know. My point
correlation
is
not causation, Clinton.
Right. And that's why I made that very clear in my assessment, saying this doesn't necessarily mean that that's what we're looking at. But this is strong evidence that people that are armed and criminals know when places that are have individuals that are armed up, they tend to find places that are weaker targets. That's why you can go to anybody in Los Angeles and just walk up and take their shit. You can do it also in San Francisco. You can also
Wait. I thought in LA it was because they eat too much soy.
Well, there's that. Look, there are many variables involved in that, you know, whatever, in that ball of wax. But like, generally, criminals know that there's no resistance. Now, are you going to feel safer walking up and taking the purses off the people eating lunch in Los Angeles, or are you going to do that in Dallas? I can tell you which one where you're less likely to do it is going to be in Dallas.
No, like, I get your point.
You know,
like I'm not saying
a well-armed society is a safe society.
I'm pro-arming society. I believe, like, look, man, like I'll support the fucking NRA. I don't give a shit. But what I think, I just think that the conversation, it's like, so my question would be this, Clint, like, what is the cutoff point for you of what people should be allowed to have, say, arm-wise?
A nuclear weapon?
Well, fuck that. If we go down that path, I think we should all have nuclear weapons, right? Mutually assured destruction for, you know, the entirety of the country. I don't know.
I wouldn't trust somebody with a bunch of anthrax.
That's illegal. Actually, anthrax is typically a lot of, like, farmers get infected with it, but it's, like, a different form of it, and you just get, like, it looks like a brown recluse bit you. You get, like, some necrosis on the skin kind of thing.
Oh, God.
No, the reason why I am so far into Second Amendment now is because of COVID and because of these lockdowns and because of the chaos of society.
But
like as a sovereign individual that has a family, and also me having a family now, like I have kids and I have a wife. As a sovereign individual that has a family, like if a mob, and we've seen this happen through the summer, like these riots and these mobs, okay, if a mob wants to come to my house and start destroying my property, I want to have the ability to defend myself and to defend my property and to defend my home. That's it. I can't rely on the police because in many of these cities, the police stood by and watched them burn buildings to the ground and did nothing. As a property owner, I want to be able to stand on my – I want to stand on my roof like a Korean in L.A. with an AR-15, okay? The Korean stores and restaurants didn't get looted. You know why? Because Koreans stood on the roofs with AR-15s. That's why. And every other place in 1992 when the Rodney King riots broke out got burned down and destroyed, okay? I want to stand on my roof like a Korean in L.A. That's all I want to do.
I have two questions. Well, first, a point to make, listeners. Clint is always all in, whether it be at one point when we were with Clint in Krakow, he was pretty far on the left, pretty looking, not even wearing, he didn't even want to wear a leather belt for his vegan purposes, going that route. Now, questions for you gentlemen, in Chicago and vice versa, South Bend, but we'll say larger Indianapolis, are you guys seeing a kind of like decrease and protest level from like the cops themselves, like in Chicago, where people just like saying fuck it and leaving the force. Like, it, like to me, like that would
wait,
be.
You know, wait, I get to respond to the vegan thing.
Hold on.
What was that?
Wait.
Little side note, Clint is a hypocrite. All right, now let's move on.
That needs to be said.
What the fuck was that?
You just said it. I just said the guy likes to wear fucking non-leather belts.
You can't do that. You can't like throw in a little stone. But before I move on to the next point, Clint's a hypocrite. Okay, now we're moving on.
Hold on. So I want to say, like, a proper indicator for arming yourself would be that you actually see security forces amongst your own communities are basically fucking going away. So Clint, the floor is yours to respond, and then Adam and Clint, please respond to the question.
All right, real quick. So in terms of my ethical vegetarianism, I haven't changed my stance on that at all. Like, I believe the factory farms are evil. It was basically my reaction to watching lots of videos of factory farming practices that are horrific and awful. And that's why over time, because I didn't feel very healthy as a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And so I started to introduce fish and then introduce certain meat that's ethically raised, ethically farmed, ethically slaughtered, you know, meat that has one bad day, especially hunting. That's where I'm trying to get my meat from now. And I have definitely evolved in that respect, but my consistency in opposing factory farming operations and the way the animals are abused and treated horribly has not changed. So let's just like, so that's where I am. I just evolved on the issue, and I would wear a leather belt. And I also, you are correct. You are correct that I do compromise more on my ethics now than I would have then, just out of pragmatism, which I think is probably, I would admit, is not correct, but you know, whatever. So yeah, there is some hypocrisy there. But in terms of the gun thing that we're talking about, my everything like about this debate comes down to me that the government is not like the people that are running our government are a bunch of nincompoops. They're a bunch of idiots. We've got these Lori Lightfoots. We've got these
Higginbothers.
We've got these just a bunch of dumbasses. You can look at the Republican side. There's a bunch of just idiots, right? They're all like, I don't want them to be telling me how I can defend my family. That's my right as an American that I get to do that. And this, and what they're going to slowly start, like Pete Buttigieg is going to tell me I can't protect my family. Get out of here. Like, that's insane. No, that's not something that a government should be able to do. The government should always know that if enough individuals are well-armed, then they have to keep themselves in check. They cannot lock you down. They cannot shut you down. They cannot take away your business. They cannot take away. This is what's happening right now, which is why more than ever before, people need to get well armed and know their gun safety, feel comfortable with a firearm. Because I'm not saying that the government is I believe in reform. I believe in voting. I believe in democracy. I believe in these things. I'm starting to have less faith in it. But at this point in time, should society absolutely fail, you should be well armed so you can take care of yourself, your family, and be able to get food and be able to, have some protection. And if you start to roll back all of these things because there might be some kid, crazy kid on Xanax that goes to a school and shoots people up, then, you know, then you can give that right away. But I think we live in a society full of risk, and that is a risk. We should try to do things to mitigate that. I think we should have better psychological, things in play to try to like help these kids that are all drugged up on all the pharmaceuticals that the FDA and the FDA pushed on them.
How about those kids just play and not have therapists involved in their lives?
Well, I think one thing that we should do first to institute this policy is stop fucking advertising pharmaceuticals. Again, the only countries in the world that are allowed to publicly disseminate and advertise, us, New Zealand. So I think that's a very good starting point. I mean, look at the levels of depression comparatively around the world to the United States. It's shockingly different. So
these,
I would say,
and these kids need to start reading like real books. Not none of this
But Adam, that's even more hopeful.
I know, but I'm a hopeful fella. I'm optimistic.
No, what they need is strong. I mean, this is what it comes down to, guys. What
they need is a fucking AR-15.
They need a strong male role model who teaches them values, who teaches them virtue, honor, who teaches them how to be a hero, who teaches them chivalry, who teaches them all of the things that they need. And part of that would be Gun ownership teaches responsibility. It teaches, you know, safety. What?
I agree with you 100%.
We don't have that.
But a lot of that stems from, again, soft power. Just look at Star Wars. There was a lot more honor when Luke Skywalker was the hero, where it was just the old school, you know, hero from Campbellian myth. Meanwhile, now you have all these dad figures, all these teachers being replaced by female figures, and that just adds to the soyness of everything. You have,
well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it, with regards to weak culture.
And Adam, you said reading, and reading novels is where you see the hero's journey. That's where you see the virtue. It's where you see the sacrifice. That's where you see someone standing up for their principles and for protecting the weak. And for like the hero is never going to be the person that's like trying to hurt society or destroy society. And now you see comic books and comic book characters that are, you know, they don't show any like of the classical virtue and the classical sort of characteristics of a hero. And that's what kids need. In the absence of a father, the kid more than ever needs a comic book or a novel so they can identify with somebody they want to model themselves after.
Yeah, every hero right nowadays is either an anti-hero or a reversal of what heroism is. And that really fucks with what goodness is with regards to kids.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's a great point to wrap up. I got to head out, boys. So as I love this, let's do one more and in the coming weeks, and we'll touch base. And
all right. I got to go to the Notre Dame tailgate. The A-10 Warthogs are flying over my house right now.
Nice.
I'm serious.
Hey, boys, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad that we're keeping this going. Honestly, it's, I don't know, enjoy it. Hopefully we can keep
Jeff,
going from time immemorial. And
when one of us dies,
I guess that's when the podcast ends, right?
Jeff is going to go buy Bitcoin as soon as he gets off here. That's why he's trying to get off, because he wants
to go. Well, hold on real quick. let me clarify. I'm not, like, I'm just, look, again, like your fucking leather belts.
This is a leather belt conversation.
You're an all or nothing type dude, right? But anyways, I love you guys. Clint, I love your hypocrisy. It fucking makes me giggle.
and on that note, we're done.
No
rebuttal.
Yeah, slide that in there.
Subscribe. Fucking keep it real, everybody. Thanks.
Love you guys. Peace.
Bye, guys.